All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, along with my co-host and friend Sherry Coolidge, silent fill in the ones and twos. Special guest today, Cincinnati City Councilman Greg Landsman. But before we get to bringing Greg onto the hot seat, the Cincinnati mayor's race, Sherry, you wrote this in your story today as we record on Cincinnati.com, quote, it's a free-for-all. That story that you wrote was about State Senator and former City Councilman Cecil Thomas announcing on Monday that he's now in the mayor's race. And it sort of, I think, maybe him taking the step has maybe potentially opened the floodgates, I think, for others to get in. Sherry,
I mean,
tell us a little more about it.
I see all of that coming at this point. You know, it really had been focused just on David Mann, Rafael Prophet, and Kelly Prather, and P.G. Sittenfeld. P.G., with all of his issues that we've been talking about, had said, you know, he's really going to stay in the race. It's been very much a conversation, though. Like, what does that really look like? And it has opened the door for people to run. Cecil Thomas specifically said, you know, that he was not going to run. He was at PG's kickoff this past summer in July, as were many other very prominent Democrats. They were lined up next to him, and they said, this is the guy. This is the guy. You know what Cecil said yesterday? I'm the guy. And, you know, and he had very nice things to say about the people in the race and maybe the people that we think we're going to talk about here in a second who might get in. But Cecil's like, here's why I'm the guy right now. He led a lot of, like, police reforms in the past. And he just is like—
And a former Cincinnati police officer, we should note.
And he said that, you know, he doesn't think PG, you know, he supports his ideals and feels like he shares some of the same ones, was worried that PG could not make it through the runoff primary where the top two vote getters, this isn't Democrats and Republicans, this is a runoff. He was like, I'm not sure PG can get through that right now. Like, really, a very, you know, without being critical, that was a tough assessment right there from one of his supporters. So he's in the race. We're seeing Wendell Young is next. He's today. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. What do you think?
Get in line. Mark Mallory, David Pepper, Denise Driehaus, Christopher Smitherman, Charlie Look. No, I'm just kidding. Maybe. I don't know. Roxanne Qualt. No, I'm just the who's who of AFTAB, Puraval. That's another name I've heard is contemplating. At some point, though, you got to think.
Did we say Christopher?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
At some point, you just got to think. If too many people get in, I mean,
Wendell, this is very serious with Wendell. He's, you know, this is Tuesday. He says he's picking up his petitions and he's really doing this. He's going to have a press conference and everything as we record. It has not happened yet. Well, you know what I think of when I think of this? Like, there was talk of Wendell might wanting to do this, like, back before everything. Well, let's talk, like, 2016, and there was this, you know, fight over, like, the wages, and he wanted to recall our current mayor. And there was talk then, and I think he was, you know, thought about it back then. But as we've talked about before here, you know, P.G. Sittenfeld, you know, fundraising, his prominence, his ability to get votes – kept some people out, and people are rethinking it, just like we just said with Cecil, and Wendell is one of them.
Well, the voters should be aware of the fact that, like P.G. Sittenfeld, Wendell Young was a part of the text messaging scandal. I've chronicled this. I remember you saying this was a Tim Russert thing. I'll never forget this because it was very, like, wow. Do you really care about the taxpayers? There was at one point a few years ago where Wendell Young was quoted of saying in a council meeting that $5 million isn't really a lot of money or isn't really real money. So Wendell Young's in, and honestly, if you're a Democrat who is a Democratic politician in this town who's got support, who's, you know, Wendell Young has been elected to council, what, three times? He was originally appointed, but at least twice. I could see where Democratic politicians in this town are saying, hey, why not? Why not me? And so it'll be interesting to see at what point. I want to say this about Cecil Thomas. He's someone who he comes up. His name comes up a lot for a lot of different races around the local political scene. His name always pops up when you hear like, hey, he's obviously a state senator. You know, you hear about a commissioner race or. Other state level races. And so I always hear his name come up, and for him to jump into the mayor's race doesn't surprise me at all. He knows his way around City Hall as a former councilman, and people really like and respect him. And, you know, he'll be term limited out. I think people should know, like, he'll be term limited out of the state house. This is his final term as a state senator. His term is up in 2022, but he's a really strong candidate with his experience as both a state senator, as a councilman, and a police officer. So it'll be interesting to see who else jumps in. Because Cecil is the kind of candidate, I think, that is strong enough to say to the rest of, you know, other potential candidates, like, you may want to think twice about jumping in.
I think his timing was, it wasn't like an official kickoff. It wasn't a press conference. He said it to one person, then he took a series of calls.
Yeah.
And because what you're saying, that was meant to be like, I'm a strong candidate.
Yep.
And here I am. You know, it wasn't going to be this coordinated, come take my picture. And, you know, this was like, I'm in. There'll be time for all that later.
But it's interesting. Like all these people we're talking about, you know, we've been speculating on it. David Pepper, I quoted him over the weekend in a column. You've talked with Mark Mallory. Denise Driehaus. So it's almost like, who's going to take the leap first? Well, Cecil Thomas just did. So now what does that do? Obviously, now Wendell Young is going to jump in.
The deadline's February 18th.
February 18th.
To get into the May – to be on the ballot for the May primary.
So that's right around the corner here, especially when you have to get 500 valid signatures, which, by the way, I think I said last week you had to get 1,000. It is actually 500, but you can get up to 1,000 signatures. But 500 of those have to be valid. So to get on to the ballot.
I agree with that. Yes. We did hear about that.
Yep.
But you know what? Now I know. I do think so. The Board of Elections, they really probably need to get their printer ready with those petitions.
I mean, we're looking at the biggest Cincinnati primary, mayoral primary, since 2005, when there were 7 candidates in that race. Does this primary top 7? It's got a chance, I think. And that was an intense race. Alicia Reese was in that. Charlie Winburn, Mark Mallory, David Pepper were marquee candidates in that race. So I think you're looking at another marquee, a lot of marquee names in this one. So
my typing fingers are ready. I got this.
Shall we? Is there anything else you want to add on the mayor's race at this point, Sherry, before we jump over and call Greg?
Just that, you know, watch for, you know, we are asking all the candidates always, you know what, they have found out how persistent I can be. I don't mind calling people every single day. How about today? Are you going to announce today? Are you going to run?
Yep.
And they're all listening, maybe, if they're, I think they listen, thinking she does do that.
All right. Keep up with our coverage on Cincinnati.com. On all that, Sherry, we'll have the latest news. I'll be weaving in and out with commentary. And I have news in my columns often, so we'll be all over that. Let's jump over and bring on Greg Landsman. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And pleased to welcome back to the podcast, Greg Landsman, Cincinnati City Councilman. Greg, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. We got some tough questions for you here today.
Fire away, man.
First, let me say, very few repeat guests, but oh, yeah. I feel like, you know, this week you have a lot to say. There's so much going on with City Council. Jason and I have already talked about that a little bit. And, you know, you have an inside view of what's going on, and we thought this would be a good time for another conversation.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, it's been the whole term has been, a roller coaster ride. And, you know, while, you know, I think everyone to some extent has gotten a lot of good stuff done. It's been a really, really tough couple of years, and the last couple of weeks have been excruciating, and you know, obviously more for the city and what's at stake, but if you're in the middle of all of it, it's disorienting and overwhelming and incredibly frustrating when you know what you signed up for was to be part of making the city better and being and getting in the middle of all these tough problems and problem solving with people that are really smart and decent. And so it's been tough. I will say that having had some time to reflect on everything, where I'm at now is, one, being very committed to fixing this, and being part of what happens next, and cleaning things up and restoring trust and getting back to a place where people feel much better about local government and what happens at City Hall, and in addition to the reforms I've proposed and will fight for, that I think will make a big difference, the culture at City Hall has to change, and that's a big piece of what I think I need to be talking about, moving forward, now and with anyone running for mayor or council. I'm the only elected member of council now running for re-election, which in of itself is insane. But the culture has to change. It's been, borderline, if not completely dysfunctional, since I've been there, in the sense that you've got these power struggles disagreements that turn into fights, that turn into wars. And, what gets lost in all of that is the work.
Respectfully, when you talk about good government, you look at some of the things you've done, and it's like you've been part of the problem, Greg. When you look at the Mount Auburn Hotel, you and Tamaya Denard introduced legislation in which you went against the Economic Development Department's recommendation to not do it. That would be usurping the administration, and apparently what the charterites always say is that it's the administration. It's the administration's job to do development deals. And then also, you were a part of the Gang of Five text messaging scandal, in which you've not really distanced yourself from some of the actors here who have not been for good government.
Is two different questions.
So then, how can you, out of one side of your mouth, say you're for good government, and out of the other side, you've been part of the problem?
Well, so I think that's not fair at all. But and it's not what you said in the past. And I think this is part of the problem, which is that there are these narratives that do pretty well in terms of clicks, but
you're the elected official, and so you can either answer my question or not.
I'm going to.
But you don't get to say what my business does or anything. You're the one who gets the questions asked, not me.
100% true. But I get to say what I believe to be true and not true. So with the Mount Auburn deal, the administration wasn't against it. They were against
the Economic Development Department said it did not score correctly on what they want to do, and they recommended that it not be done.
To the amount of money that it was.
That's just not true. That's the issue. I believe they were recommending that it get 99 years or 60% of the CRA, and in order to get the full CRA, it would need to either be in a different part of town or it would need to be catalytic in some way. And so this was going to be the first Black-owned hotel, and the option was for council to say, okay, is there a way to make it catalytic, which is what we found in terms of making sure that we locked in good-paying jobs, which changed the nature of the project. And so, do I support efforts that say, look, there's got to be a clear line in terms of both the mayor's role and council's role in economic development, 100%. Absolutely do. And it is, you know, there's only been, I believe, two scenarios where I did anything other than vote on an economic development deal. One was 1518 Race, which the administration wanted to do, but the current zoning laws didn't allow them without a notwithstanding, which had to come from council. And it was a project that I felt really, you know, passionate about and glad it got done. But, you know, and on the text, as you know, like, I made a mistake. I should never have responded to those texts. I was out of town. And let me step back. You know, the mayor and the city manager got into, obviously, a huge disagreement, and the mayor wanted to fire the city manager. I had just gotten there. So I had said to the mayor, look, I am willing to work with you on this. I just, one, I'm leaving town for work, and two, I just got here, so give me some time. I didn't get that. Now, PG then sent a text to me and several others, and I had said to him, look, I think this is coming dangerously close to violating the open meetings law. I did not think it did. There was at some point a talk about a phone call, and, you know, I said that absolutely is a violation, and that never took place. What I, did was say, look, if you want to put my name on this document, I'm not ready to fire the city manager. So sure, I will. But in the end, when it was clear that the city manager wasn't able to do his job, he wasn't focused on it anymore, I decided that, look, I was ready. And so I don't believe I have been part of the problem in that sense. Like, there are times when I am siding with, the majority on council, and there's times when I'm siding with the mayor. And it has been lonely in that sense, because I have tried to avoid playing into what is problematic in terms of the culture, which is this sort of bifurcated system, which has been going on for a long time at City Hall, where you have these sort of two teams. And it just isn't helpful.
So why not do more to distance yourself from the so-called Gang of Five? Why not help? Why not pay some of the money back to the taxpayers? Why not when PG was arrested on federal corruption charges? Why not immediately come out and call for him to resign and drop out of the mayor's race? To me, if you really want to push for good government and separate yourself from PG and being connected to Tamiya and PG and Wendell and the so-called Gang of Five, why not do more and say more to distance yourself from that, you know, whatever. Again, this is what you guys called yourself, the Gang of Five.
I didn't. I mean, that's part of
You're part of the group, and one member of the group called yourself that. Chris Seelbach is another part of that group, so I think I've named all of them here. Why not do more to distance yourself from the so-called Gang of Five?
I have done all of the things that I think I can or should do in terms of voting based on what I believe to be right. Sometimes I have voted with them. Sometimes I voted with the mayor. And I did when, you know, with both Jeff and PG and Tamiya, you know, I said the same thing, which was they've got to, you know, step aside. We can't do our work, which has to go on. And their focus has to be on their families and their cases.
You did say we have all had some time to reflect. What do you think right now, when you look at your friend and fellow Democrat PG Sittenfeld, who was the front runner to become mayor of the city? What do you think now?
In terms of the work, I really do believe we have a ton of work to do to fix what's broken. And part of that is the good government reforms, new protocols, not just with development, but all requests of the administration have to be tightened up. I proposed campaign finance reform stuff that I think will help immediate disclosure of contributions to a PAC or to a campaign that involves anyone that has any business with the city, training, you know, other things. And this cultural shift, and Jason, you're right. I have to prove that I'm going to be part of the solution. There's no question about that. So I've got a lot of work to do, maybe more than most, because of, you know, the fact that I'm sticking around and did make mistakes.
You did not answer my question.
No, I'm going back to the question.
Reforms are good, but what do you think? You were sitting there. We were all sitting there.
I think professionally, I have to be really clear about directionally where I think we got to go. Personally, it was a gut punch. It was awful. It is awful. And, you know, I have a lot of empathy for people. And so, of course, I have empathy for anyone going through anything like this. I also am incredibly frustrated by it, and sad, you know, personally sad. You know, I'm not sure, you know, what else you're looking for. It's been awful.
So, do you want P.G. Sittenfeld to resign or not?
You know, I don't think outside of the ability to pick somebody that is more aligned with my values, I don't think it really matters other than, you know, I think the larger thing is that he steps away, which he's going to do. And I think that's good for us to be able to move on. Now that means that Judge Winkler will get to a point, presumably that'll be a Republican. As you know, I've said, partisan politics has to be one of our, you know, it has to be the least of our worries at this point. So, you know, would the resignation mean that we would be able to appoint somebody who's more aligned with my values? Yes, but I think at this point we have to all sort of dig into, you know, into the work with whoever is there. And my hope, and, you know, like, you know, Winkler is going to appoint somebody who, you know, again, is most likely a Republican. My hope is somebody who's going to be, you know, very, very productive in terms of this new culture, which is we're all working together. And, you know, if we disagree, we disagree, but it doesn't snowball into, you know, fights and wars.
But, I mean, I've said this on this podcast several times before. Every time I think it's time for a reset, it's not a reset. I mean, how the next council meeting is technically December 16th.
Right.
Are we going in there and discussing policy? No, there's been no committee meetings for a month. Like, what is the path forward here when there's, like, two people suspended? I mean, I'm not saying anything that they're not saying. I mean, there's so many rumors. And there's, like, a cloud hanging over City Hall that isn't done. Like, how do things go forward from here?
I mean, it's a good question. I don't have the answer. I mean,
to have the answer.
What's that?
You're elected to have the answer.
People are expecting answers.
I don't know how
right
it's going to play out. I know what I'm committed to doing. You know, my hope is, I mean, there's going to be a lot of work on the, you know, next week. I mean, I've been talking to David Mann about, you know, all of the things that will likely come before us.
Development deals? Are there development deals coming next week? Because if you talk to David Mann, that's budget committee.
There typically are at the end of the year, and so we'll need the full day. I mean, it will be a very, very productive week in terms of getting things done.
All right, tell me what you think needs to happen with development deals. How does a citizen of Cincinnati watch a city council meeting next week and say, oh, these deals, I'm sure they're all fine. I mean, these other deals that we heard about from the federal authorities, they're not fine. But these deals are totally fine. I mean, do you feel like there actually is an audit going on? What does this audit need to look like? And can we vote on a development deal next week?
I would hope so. I mean, I trust the administration to bring forward development recent deals, if they're recommending, obviously what we do is, you know, look at them, and if we need more time, then we hold them.
The administration thought that we should sell the port of the port to sell 435 Elm, the heart of two federal indictments of sitting council members, to the port. Did you sit there and think to yourself, oh, well, there were some problems with that? No, I didn't.
I didn't either.
Then how are we going to know that next week?
You know, I guess what we have to do is, you know, make sure that we ask way more questions when they come up next week. But yeah, I mean, you know, look, this is all going to happen before these new protocols get put into place. I have been talking to the city manager and over the course of the last couple of days about all kinds of proposed changes that the administration is going to suggest in terms of not just development deals, but any request to the administration from council or the mayor has to be much more transparent. There's got to be a process. It's got to be completely above board. And, you know, you're right. That's going to take more than a week to sort out and put in place.
Well, let's and Greg, thank you for these are tough questions here today, and appreciate you.
You know,
you're,
I apologize.
No need for an apology. I want to ask. Here's what I want to ask you, I've been asking a lot of people. Sherry's been asking a lot of people this too, and I think it's something I haven't asked you. I don't know if Sherry has or not, but hey, we got you on the podcast. Taking kind of a step back from this.
Yeah.
From your perspective, you get elected in 2017, and I'm just talking about your perspective. Where do you think things went wrong? Is there a time? Is there a vote? Is there a conversation?
This is the question. I mean, and this is what I mean. Like, I love it's such an important question, and I think we have to go. Like, there. Clearly, there were issues in terms of development deals and people having relationships with developers and taking money. You know, I mean, I never took a dime from a Chin or, you know, I don't even know who these other these people have given me the name. Sherry's told me the names of these two other these so-called investors. But, you know, there are serious issues in terms of the corruption stuff. The culture piece and what went wrong, I think some of it was there before the term began. But a lot of it started pretty quickly when this – and I'm not placing blame because I don't think that's helpful. I'm just trying to – understand what happened so that we can fix it and we can say to people running for mayor and council, you know, here's what happened. Let's avoid this moving forward. And that is, there was an immediate sort of unraveling, you know, when the mayor and the manager, you know, went to war. And, you know, there was a clear case that Harry Black, the manager, needed to go. I had just gotten there, so I didn't feel comfortable saying, you know, okay, I'm okay firing somebody I've not worked with. But that did lead to this really problematic situation where, you know, it was unresolved for a couple weeks. There was the text messaging, you know, and I should never have responded the way I did. And I should have just, you know, either put my name on it separately or just not put my name on it and release my own statement saying I wasn't prepared to fire him. But that war, I think, rages on. You know, and a lot of this stems from that. I mean, you know, when I said, look, it's time, I'm no longer comfortable, you know, with Harry Black because he's, you know, he's not doing his work. He was so obsessed with this fight with John.
No, we were in the middle of Kyle Plush's, you know, tragic death.
He just was not focused on the work. I was saying, I'm really concerned. You know, I'm getting closer and closer to saying it's time to let him go. At which point it got back to Harry, I'm sure, and he released this memo saying, you know, these awful things about the mayor and pointing to this development deal, this Elm Street deal. And then, you know, weeks later, FBI agents show up and, you know, so much of it springs or sprung from that. And, you know,
as far as I know, things in the letter that we're speaking of were actually not true. But yes, there's a lot of speculation that the FBI did get involved after this letter that we're talking about. Like, this was a memo Harry wrote to himself, like questioning two development deals, which I don't want to go into because honestly, yes, 435 Elm is mentioned in like a different kind of way than we've heard about it. And there's Dan Horn and I have seriously looked at those deals in the context as Harry mentioned them, and we've not found those allegations to be true. But yes,
no,
I see what you're saying.
I wasn't suggesting they were. I was just suggesting that it's likely that the FBI showed up because of that. I mean, they were there focused on that Elm Street deal. So maybe it's a coincidence. I don't know. But I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, how this all began.
I do want to talk about the middle of all of it.
What's that?
Like, I mean, we're bouncing around a little bit here, and I do understand that. And I feel like the people who do listen to the podcast follow along pretty closely. So I'm sorry if we are bouncing around and bringing up issues that you're like, what? Because an interview like this is very difficult. But I do want to ask you about things that happened in the middle of all of the things. So now this is all going on, what we're talking about. And then we see two separate things. We see, you know, Derek Bauman, you know, try and bring Christopher Smitherman into the case, which Judge Woolman did not allow him to do.
The texting case.
And additionally, we saw, you know, that letter that was written about Christopher Smitherman. And so I want to ask you about both of those things and what you think about those now. And, like, is that something that we've moved past?
I don't think we have, and I'm trying to get us past that, and that does require, more work on my part, which I'm committed to doing. So the situation was that there was the text issue, a lawsuit. The administration was saying, "Hey, we're not going to release these texts." I mean, I think I talked to both of you. I wanted to release mine.
That's true. This is true.
I at one point I brought my text to a meeting with both of you, but I should have just said, "Look, I'm done," because I thought the whole thing was really problematic. And then this lawsuit required outside attorneys, and it just snowballed. It was looking back, it's all regrettable. I wasn't involved in that piece, but I should have fought harder. I mean, Sherry, you and I talked about it a lot, which is I should have just said, like, I'm doing what I'm going to do, which is I'm releasing my text. You all do whatever you want. And ultimately the texts were released. And in terms of the letter, you know, the letter was something that, you know, others, pushed for, wrote, but, you know, ultimately, when I first was approached about it, I said, I don't really think that's a good idea. And so it didn't happen. Then I was approached again. I said, fine, you know, go do the letter. Looking back on it, I should have.
You didn't write the letter. You just knew about it and asked people to sign it.
Right.
And for context, go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I don't remember really asking anyone, but maybe one or two people.
For context, this letter, correct me if I'm wrong, but this was a letter written in response to when Christopher Smitherman used the word, called the Gang of Five text messaging scandal evil, quote, evil. Is that?
So there was like a community letter from folks saying, like, you know, to denounce that. And, you know, you're right. Like, to go back to your original point, I apologize for interrupting. I was just trying to make the point about the Mount Auburn deal, just that it was a little bit different. But yeah, I should have, absolutely said, look, I stop this fight. You know, this is not helpful. And so I know firsthand how frustrating it can be. It wasn't my fight, and it wasn't something that I was you know, pushing or spearheading, but ultimately was I complicit? Yeah. And so I've apologized personally to the vice mayor. We'll continue to try to make that relationship work. And I think the lesson learned is it's very easy to get caught up in these wars and these fights. And it is, this is what I think we have to challenge.
You're definitely not the only one. I do want to say that. You happen to be willing to discuss all of this with us right now.
Yeah.
You're not.
Yeah. Thank you
we
for
understand.
That. Yes.
We know that you're not the only one.
No. I mean, if anything, I really do feel like I've been sort of trapped in the middle of both sides of this and, you know, by my own doing, you know, like I didn't need to be trapped in any of it. And I've disappointed people on both sides. There are times where the mayor has been really frustrated with me and times where this progressive majority on council have been really frustrated with me. And, you know, having done it for a couple of years, I do appreciate how easy it is to get pulled into this. And it does require a real commitment to stay out of this stuff. And, you know, that's my commitment moving forward. And it's something that I'm going to push people who are running for mayor and council on that these fights, these, you know, they have to end. And when people start to disagree, you know, we have to sort of pull each other back from it because it's not what people elected us to do. It's not helpful.
Couple things I want to make clear to our listeners and readers is that you are the only person who was involved in the text message scandal who has publicly apologized. PG did put out a statement which was sort of buried down in there, and I think probably did it after he was pressured and asked by reporters. But anyway, and that is correct. That I remember you and I sitting down for lunch at Ben Carew Tower and us talking about the text messages. And I sensed a real genuine sincerity from you that you and the text messages themselves show that you had raised questions in the text messages about, hey, I don't know if we should be doing this, everyone. And so I think that's important context for our listeners, maybe if they have been keeping up, because there's so much going on to understand and be clear. When you is through all this, Greg, do you feel like, and it's interesting to look at, you know, you're going to be, and let me make sure, I assume you're going to run for reelection. And if that is the case, you're going to be the only person on the ballot who was elected in 2017. So the only incumbent, technically. Do you feel like, you know, what is the big lesson for you through all this? Is that, do you feel like you need to have your voice heard more, that you need to take a stronger stand against some of these things? And I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but like, what's a big lesson for you, I guess, sort of that overriding through all this?
That's a really important question. It's the one that I've been wrestling with for the last couple of weeks because, you know, I do have to decide, you know, whether to run again. It's only been a few years. There are things that I'm really passionate about. You know, before I got elected, you know, I worked really hard on this preschool promise effort. It's helped. We're closing in on like 10,000 children who've gotten quality preschool. You know, been working on eviction prevention stuff that's kept thousands of people in their homes. We got the largest increase in youth employment ever, something I really wanted to do before I got elected to council. And so there's all these other things that I am really committed to getting done. But I will say the big lesson is that I have to be, yes, a much more vocal advocate for a different culture, a different way of working together. And I have tried to do that, you know, quietly, you know, privately, like pulling people aside and saying, hey, let's, you know, don't get into that fight, or you may want to go and apologize, or, you know, all of those other things. I you know, and because I wanted to protect folks and make sure that, you know, they had an opportunity to do the right thing without being publicly scolded. But I do think that there is value and just saying all of this stuff publicly in a way that doesn't undermine folks, but says, look, you know, we've got to get to a better place, because the problem with these big fights and when these relationships unravel is that, you know, really important work doesn't get done. And
that's
the
true.
Work that and the work that does get done that, gets right. questioned. And
all right.
So,
like, all right. I have to ask you. Ready?
Yeah.
Are you
yeah.
just you, I feel like you just left wiggle room that you might not run. I mean, I thought that was a foregone conclusion. Are you rethinking that?
I mean, I think it's important to always be reflective, and so I've been reflecting on it. There's a ton of stuff that I still want to get done. You know, there's
and like, your preschool have, promise work.
I'm gonna
I don't
come back to these things, but yes, no, I think it says it would say something truly problematic about me personally and about the prospect of fixing this if I didn't. That I wasn't fully committed to fixing what's broken and fighting through this adversity in order to get to a place where I can say I helped, make this place work again, and did so in a way that produced really meaningful results for the people I serve. So I am going to run again. And, but
I didn't want to leave that ambiguous.
but it was like, I don't mind admitting that it was, I've been thinking about like, okay, what makes the most sense? Like outside of counsel, I was able to, you know, pass what I think is one of the most significant investments in children ever in our city. And so there's
talking about preschool promise, right?
Yeah. The preschool promise. Yep. And there's been a ton of stuff on council than I've been able to do. But again, I think this is one of those moments where, even though you're right, like I've been at City Hall. So like to avoid being part of any of the issues would be really difficult. Right. So I have responsibility here, perhaps more than others because, you know, of some of the mistakes I made and or the fact that I'm the only elected person running for re-election. I feel a tremendous amount of responsibility to fix this.
I think the citizens will be happy to hear you say that.
Yeah. And I do think part of it, you know, starts with what we do over the course of the next few months, you know, in terms of the good government reforms, working on the culture and getting results. I mean, we have to deliver results. That's where people, I think, will say, okay, you know, we can trust you all again. But it also means looking at those running for mayor and council, including myself, right? And saying, okay, are you clear about the purpose, your purpose? Like, are you going to, and we have to push and prod on folks, including me, like, what is it that you specifically want to achieve? So that it's not about, you know, a political power or the ladder climbing or the other stuff that gets folks, you know, into trouble. And do you have a history of building coalitions? Can you work really well with folks that you disagree with? And, you know, can you stay off the internet and out of these social media fights and all of those other things so that you can be part of a new culture at City Hall? And I think having the Inquirer, this is on every organization, every voter, but pushing and prodding on candidates around, like, is it really clear why they want to do this? And are they going to work really well with everyone, including those they disagree with? Having the Inquirer consider endorsing folks again, I think, will help. And asking, you know, one of the things I'll do over the course of the next few months is talk to these organizations that do the endorsement and say, look, I'm going to make the case that these are two really big questions that need to be addressed with anyone running for anything at City Hall.
All right. So, I mean, I think everyone agrees that a lot of vetting is going to need to be done here and a lot of tough questions. Who do you think should be the mayor? If you're going to run for re-election, have a good shot of running.
Yeah,
it is a free-for-all as we record at this moment on Tuesday, Wendell Young said he's getting into the race. We heard Cecil Thomas last night. We already have three candidates, David Mann, Kelly Prather, Rafael Prophet. I think we can expect to see some other people get in. Who do you think should be the, oh, and PG Sittenfeld. So do you think PG should run, and who do you think should be the mayor?
So
that's
really
not the hot seat. I don't know what is, Greg.
I'll start with the hard question, the hard part of that. I don't know how, you know, and again, I don't want to like get into guilt or innocence because like that's not fair to PG, but I don't see, you know, how he runs.
Hang on, Greg, just real quick. Do you, and just putting you on the spot on this, do you want him to come out and say, or I'm out of the race?
Yeah, I don't think it's a good idea for him. Like, if I were giving him advice, which I have not talked to PG, it would be, hey, head down, focus on this case, you know, and you know, hopefully you're exonerated. I mean, I don't think anyone wishes, you know, anyone to go to jail, you know, in these cases, although maybe they do. I don't know, but I certainly don't want to see that. But I don't think the political stuff it should be a priority. I think you got to just walk away, you know, and get through this. And, you know, if you're able to come back. But in terms of other folks, in the interest of full disclosure, I ran David Pepper's campaign for mayor in 2005. David's one of my closest friends, mm-hmm. On the planet. So I love David. And, you know, I also have learned my lesson about endorsing folks. So I'm not going to do that.
Do you like it? Do you want to see David get in the race? He doesn't live in the city, and he's got to make a decision fairly quickly here. But no, you know, you guys are you're right. You're very close. You have great respect for each other. Would you like to, and I'm not asking you for an endorsement? Would you like to see him as part of the field?
Yeah, I mean, it's personally it's going to be tough because of the family stuff. But yeah, David. Like, so if I think about these two boxes. You know, David was somebody who released five big plans when he ran for mayor in 2005, one on public safety, one on, you know, youth and young people, children and families, one on transport. I mean, he was so clear about what he wanted to achieve. And I think he's somebody who builds incredibly, you know, positive relationships and stays out of these fights. That said, I have a great relationship with David Mann, love Cecil, one of my favorite people in the world. So, you know, it's, we'll see, you know, but no matter who it is, these are the things I'm going to push on. And the same with council candidates is like, you know, people have to, be willing and clear about their commitment to fundamentally changing the culture and being part of a different, highly functioning culture at City Hall.
You're a leader in the Democratic Party, and like you said, hey, you want your voice to be stronger, and that's a lesson that you're, you know, taking away from this. Do you feel it's incumbent upon you to really talk to party leaders, knowing how much voters put stock into the sample ballot and the Democratic sample ballot? Do you feel like it's part of your role as an elected official, as someone who is respected in the Democratic Party by, you know, all factions of the party, and you're one of few people, you know, you come to mind, Bridget Kelly comes to mind, Denise Trias comes to mind, and not too many others come to mind. Do you feel like it's important for you to stand up to stand up and say to elected, you know, to Democratic leaders, hey, here's how we need to change our endorsement process, our vetting process. Are you going to be a part of that? Sorry, that was a long question to get to that.
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, I will go as far as I'm sure not only being part of it, but laying out what I think has to be true and doing it with a bunch of partners, right? Like, you know, it's not just my, you know, my scorecard or my, you know, questionnaire, but I do think that getting really clear as to what our expectations are and doing it as a community, but me, yes, I think pushing on the party to hold folks accountable, really push and prod on these two big things, which is, and you'd be surprised, like if somebody doesn't have a clear sense of what they're going to do, it should raise red flags, you know, because then, you know, being the mayor or being on council really has more to do with something other than the work. The other thing is the fighting, whether it's on social media or, you know, in council, whatever it is, you know, that has to be called out. And it has to end, because again, it just, it undermines the work. It undermines our ability to, you know, get really big things done. And, you know, when we do the work, as we talked about next week, like, you know, having it all be questioned is hugely problematic. I mean, it's just, it's devastating in terms of, having a highly functioning city government. So, yeah, I plan to be much more vocal and open. Like, I don't want you to take away, and hopefully you don't, that I somehow have all the answers. What I am committed to doing is laying out what I believe to be true, hearing from everyone else, and then really pushing for that.
I do have one other question. You were among many, many, many Democrats who have accepted a donation from PG's PAC for not your campaign. We saw the Ohio Democratic Party, led by your good friend David Pepper, say they were announced they were going to donate the money they received from the PAC to a charity. Have you thought any what you may do, or if anything, with that money you received from the PAC?
Yes, and like all things moving forward, I need to get confirmation that what my plan is appropriate, but it will be very, because there may be different rules, and I think at this point you got to double check everything, but the plan is to donate it to a charity, a nonprofit that I've been working with pretty closely for the last couple of months. I mean, it's Women Helping Women. I shouldn't be.
I mean, I was thinking that in my head, but all right.
I mean, I it's like, you know, they, you know, the number of, this pandemic has been awful on everyone, and certain communities in particular, the number of people who have been abused because of the economic uncertainty and folks being stuck at home, particularly Black women, and the homicide rates for women have spiked. And there have been a few things that I've gotten really involved in over the course of this pandemic, and that's one of them.
Hey, you've we really put you on the spot today.
Anytime, you know, and you, job, right?
And you know what? People should know you've always been you're a pro. And you're always gracious. You're accessible. You're always open to answering reporters' tough questions. At least from I can speak for myself. And you've always been, available when I've had tough questions for you. And you know that. And you know I've been critical. And I respect that. And I respect that you understand it's not about me or the journalist, and that it's about speaking to the public. So,
for sure.
Thanks so much for your time today. And we'll be talking.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again to Greg Landsman for joining us today. Let's lighten it up a little bit. That was a tough interview, And let's get back to this, Sherry. Our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week, because I think you've got one for us. And what is it?
I'm starting to get in the Christmas spirit. The Coolidge House is completely decorated. The guest offices have trees now. We did a little extra this year since we work at home. But I'm definitely in the Christmas mood. And I'm going to actually do this, but I'm doing it virtually a little bit. There's a citywide scavenger hunt. I feel like it's just what we need right now. Something you could do alone or
outside, right?
And outside and people in your bubble. And so it's very fun. It's called Finding LaSantaVille. And they got a gaming company to come in and create clues that you have to find throughout the city. And so the first one, I mean, it was so easy. I forget what the actual clue was, but it's clearly the Freedom Center. And so that was a good start to things. But
that was
the
answer, Freedom Center?
Well, I don't know. They didn't say
that was the clue.
I would say yes. Okay. Like the clue, it was like, you know, where – I forget the exact thing, but I'm going to read you the second clue.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we
Let's
do
we
that.
Okay.
And then we'll see if we can get it. All right. And then, all right. Who am I kidding?
We'll
do this together. It'll be That's So Cincinnati doing the scavenger hunt.
Sounds great.
I did not ask him this first. He's going to kill me later, you guys.
I know. This is all a surprise to me. Sherry said she had a That's So Cincinnati thing this week. And so I said, don't tell me. Let's talk about it on the podcast.
But the truth is, when Jason and I do talk during the week, we talk about very serious things. Like I have meant to mention this to you all week, but then we get off on, you know, who's running for mayor, which you talked about earlier. And so I haven't had time to talk about this, but it's best to surprise you on things like this. Phil, you can help us.
Phil in the ones and twos.
All right.
Drum roll, please. The clue is?
A 27-foot-tall outdoor sculpture watching over contemporary art.
It's got to be that robot thing, right?
I was thinking the robot, too. That's what my...
What's that thing called? Metrobot? Is that
yes,
what it's called?
Yes.
Because I'm so artsy. You know,
I can't even get the next words out. Sorry, Jay.
I had an old sports writer buddy at the Cincinnati Post, Mark Lancaster, who I once infamously said this in the newsroom that I can't stand the arts, and he never let me live it down.
Rightly
and so.
So
I always
Rightly
had to like
so.
I always had to retract and say, well, no, I meant like paintings and stuff like sculptures. Like, I love the performing arts. Like, I love the Cincinnati Symphony. Absolutely love it.
All right.
Like, I love Broadway plays. I meant art museums. That's what I meant.
All right. Fair enough. Jason.
But to this day, every time I ever talk to him, I remember when you said you hate the arts? Jeez.
That sounds like you. I miss sitting next to you in the newsroom.
I love the Cincinnati Pops, too.
So I feel like that is definitely, we're on the right track there. Instead, it's going to be throughout the entire city. So, but it's also meant, I should say, so I've talked to some people about this. It's really meant to get people downtown.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing a lot of things. And
glad you brought that up.
We'll talk about this in subsequent episodes. You know, downtown, one of the alleys, like there's trees from the 52 neighborhoods. There's a lot of windows that are decorated. It's kind of being billed as like found Cincinnati. But it's more than just that. It's fun things to do outside, but it's to get people downtown and hopefully spending some money to really help these businesses and restaurants and – And so, but I mean, what a great idea. I mean, I really can't wait to see the neighborhood Christmas trees. And it's going to be warmer these next couple of days too, which I feel like will help me.
Yeah.
Come down here for more than the podcast.
I'm glad you said that. And I was over in the Crew Tower last week and they did get the Crew Tower tree out, which is beautiful in the
There's
mall.
There's nothing more that's so Cincinnati than that. We've gone to see Santa there. If you're going to take the kids
they
to
have
see
Santa's
Santa.
Chairs set up there. Which is great.
They have a good Santa there, and we've always made a day of that in past years. I mean, if there's little ears here, but, you know, we're just that year past.
Oh, you are
having to do that. And it was a hard conversation, but it happened.
Yes.
But so much fun to go there and do it. And it's the beautiful photos and not long lines.
I would encourage folks to support downtown businesses. I hit up Cook Sporting Goods last week and bought a FC Cincinnati t-shirt for my four-year-old for Christmas. And one of my small traditions that I always get my sons each a new different t-shirt each year. So I just started that when Reed was a baby. And the first ever t-shirt I got him was a Cleveland Cavs LeBron James t-shirt. So
very much I always get him like,
and it's usually something specific to Ohio or Cincinnati.
Are you keeping them?
Yes. Wow. Except I was told the other day, because I asked about this, do we still have the LeBron James t-shirt? And yeah, we do not.
Oh, no.
Bethany, my wife, said, oops, I think I gave that away.
She knows now. That's a nice tradition.
And steam came out of my ears. No, it didn't. I just like, I understand.
All right. If we ever got Jack clothes for Christmas, he'd kill us.
Anyway, let's tie a bow on this in the Christmas spirit. Great stuff. Send us your That's So Cincinnati moments of the week, because we are getting back to this fun segment. We got to lighten this up again. So email jwilliams@inquirer.com, scoolidge@inquirer.com, @SharonCoolidge on Twitter, and @jwilliamscincy on Twitter. Don't forget those subscriptions. Cincinnati.com/subscribe for the latest deal as the local journalism continues to move toward a local digital subscription model that gives you all access to all of our content. Your response to our content, our columns, our news reports, our enterprise stories, our photos, our videos on the City Hall scandal and coverage has just been just tremendous. Your emails as well. Thank you so much for your support of local journalism and your interest in this story. You can count on us. Sherry is our leader in covering City Hall, and you can count on us to continue to just stay all over this story. So thanks so much, and we'll catch you next week.